Yes, sir. Episode 8, Operation Paperclip, underway. Operation Paperclip, it's pretty deep. You know, it's the affairs of the Nazis in the U.S. But we really just cover Operation Alsos in this one, which is a small nook and cranny of the whole of this big operation. Because we just that's my chihuahua shaking his little collar. Bless his little heart. I just love my little buck-tooth chihuahua. Sweet little bubba. So Operation Alsos is just a part of Operation Paperclip. We literally scratched the surface. Like, literally, I sat there for hours scratching the surface of the book with my fingernails because I couldn't wrap my head around it. I literally only scratched the surface of this topic. So join us as we start to unfold really what the corruption was between the Nazis and the U.S. I mean, we're supposed to be the good guys, and, you know, it just doesn't seem like we were. And the whole point is that stuff carries over to today. You know, people think this stuff just ended after World War II. Nuh-uh, cuz that shit just began. Let's dig in. Let's do this. Check out the Patreon. Videos with pictures. Audio with no ads.
So, yeah, after 15 minutes of technical difficulties, we'll go ahead and get rolling on this week's Illuminati Squatty Potty.
This week's technical difficulties were on Jesse.
Yeah, they were.
Not me this time, not because of malware bites.
Talked a lot of trash the last couple of episodes about Dylan always having technical difficulties. And here we go on me, with me on my end. I've been able to get a simple thing like a microphone locked down for a podcast. All right, so this week we're talking about Operation Paperclip. And specifically, we're reviewing some of the content from Annie Jacobson's Operation Paperclip book, The Secret Yes. Intelligence Program That Brought Nazi Scientists to America. So, how much deep diving did you do into this, my friend?
A little bit. I found that the first chapter was pretty substantial. I mean, I wanted to dive more, but it was like, you know, I still got to get through this chapter and make sure I understand it. But I did a little bit.
Yeah, I think chapter one did a really nice job kind of outlining what kind of psychological mindset the U.S. was in at the time when all this was going down, when we made the weird decision to bring Nazi scientists over to work for us. And it also
illegally
and also really highlighted what the character of what some of these men did in the course of the war that would make them really someone you wouldn't expect the U.S. would even want to associate themselves with in any capacity whatsoever. So where you want to dig in, where you want to jump in at, man? You just want to jump in kind of how the book starts?
No, I just want to talk about it. I mean, I got notes here to remind me of stuff, but it just reminds me how these people were praised. Like, these were good scientists and good military men to start off, like, who, and they worked with those private chemical companies. What was Volkswagen was one of them. Like, Hitler, they wound up renting slaves out from their concentration camp to these private companies that used them as cheap labor till they died.
Yeah, that was and probably that, the most disgusting part of,
like, that's
all of it. Hey, you want to stop sharing your screen until you want to show something? Sorry, I don't have to.
Oh, I'm screen sharing?
Yeah, I don't want to have to look at myself the whole time. Cool. Thanks. Much better. Now I feel like I'm talking to you and not myself.
Yeah, but that just trips me out because the whole time I'm thinking about, whenever I think about Nazi Germany and all this stuff, I think about America and like what it is now. Because that whole business machine through Operation Paperclip, it's like that business went out of business and then we bought it and then we picked up that game plan and started running that business. It's not like it went away.
Yeah, what business are you referring to? Just the business of
propaganda, wars, slavery, Holocaustism, genocides, lying to people, total takeover, all of the logistics and what was technically happening in Nazi Germany is happening now in America with loads of propaganda,
endless wars, genocides we help, you know, the bombs, the fake science and the scientists that are bought out, like the sugar science of the 50s and the cigarette science, that was all proven to be fake. Mm-hmm. That whole machine from medical to everything came here.
Yeah, so you think we just kind of copy-pasted Nazi values from 1940s Germany to U.S., basically.
Politically, and from politically, it goes down to every faction of society. I mean, not maybe not people or culture. People like that's kind of what I'm getting at, is it's crazy the normality of the world they lived in while these things, because we look back and we think of Holocaust, but when they were alive, it was normal stuff and they needed to be protected from bad people because science, like Hitler infiltrated science and people believed the disease, and that's what allowed them.
Was like one of the guys they talked about in chapter one of the book, like basically almost won a Nobel Prize. For I think his work on
Hagen, like,
vaccine for Hagen,
that's where they raided his apartment. It was what if I'm remembering, it was 3 or 4 days before. So this all starts this book. I mean, I took notes on the prologue. It was so dang interesting.
Yeah,
but chapter one starts with them raiding this guy you're talking about, his apartment, because he fled because they were fighting. Where was that? In France?
This was in Strasbourg, France.
Strasbourg, with the college, University of Strasbourg.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another one of those points I was making. I could, maybe I should save that about Strasbourg. That comes up in the book, but.
Yeah, like basically. I forgot
what I was talking about. Oh, they were raiding his apartment, Eugene Hagen.
Yeah, back in 1941, that university in Strasbourg was taken over by the Germans, like what they call the Reich Research Council.
Mm-hmm.
And they just started running that college. So imagine for 3 years, from 1941 to 1944, you know, you have your educational institutions just being dominated by Nazi Germany.
Yeah, and they did it through a college.
Right.
That the citizens respected. It was normal stuff, and all this was taking place. So when we did that Skull and Bones episode, they did it through Yale and Harvard, and people kind of mock the Skull and Bones from the colleges and people not trusting John Hopkins Health Center and all these big hospitals and conspiracies of harvesting organs from. You ever heard that conspiracy that don't put an organ donor on your driver's license? Because if you're near death, they'll let you die so they can harvest your organs.
Mm.
Yeah, it's certain big hospitals. That's where, I mean, not everyone. Obviously, we know people that do hospital work, and they would say that never happened. Yeah, so I wouldn't expect the Lafayette General to be tied in with Israeli organ harvesting programs. But
that's like a real conspiracy that's out there.
Oh, yeah. Alex Jones actually talks deep about it.
We said from the beginning of this whole thing, like, you're the one who's like way more well-versed on conspiracies than
I wouldn't say that. So. That's generous. I'm an idiot. I don't know nothing. I stumble over my words and stuff.
Yeah, we both do.
I get so confused thinking about this. I just know that organ harvesting is something I heard Alex Jones talking about.
That's a legitimate business like that.
Yeah.
That's a legitimate black market business, you know? But yeah, I can see that being a real thing.
Yeah, Alex Jones said his dad was in the hospital when he was a kid. Oh, it was a question, why is Alex Jones the way he is? And he said, as a kid, my dad was telling me what was happening in this hospital. I don't know if there's truth to all this, but Alex Jones has been mostly right, except lately a couple things.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little off the rocker, but he's been right. Like, he spouts off some crazy sounding shit, but sometimes...
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, a lot of times he's right about it.
See, that's the new version. That's 2.0. Not defending Alex, but I think from what I've learned about him, there's two versions. I listened to an interview with his wife, and she said he was different when the divorce and the lawsuits and when the big studio deal came in the last 3 years, because he started putting out high-level studio stuff, which people started thinking the Trump campaign and these guys got to him, and he was a shill at that point. That was at the Sandy Hook. So there was the divorce. He was drinking a lot. And his studio blew up because someone put lots of money into it. And that's when he went wacky. But But the decade before that, from 9/11, he was right about a lot of stuff. And he was talking about, as a kid, his dad was talking about they were harvesting organs at the hospital he worked at.
So his dad was like a physician?
Something like that. So Alex, I didn't look into this. I didn't know we were talking about Alex, but...
Yeah, for sure.
It just goes back to Operation Paperclip and how we got the Nazis that did that stuff first.
Yeah, so, I mean, the book starts out, they're raiding this guy's apartment, and they're looking for basically papers on how close the Nazis are to waging what they call ABC warfare, which is atomic, biological, or chemical warfare. This was all part of something called the Alsos mission.
Operation Alsos.
Operation Alsos. Which was something I just kind of Wikipedia'd that. That was something that was created following the September 1943 Allied invasion of Italy with a twofold assignment. Its objectives were to search for personnel, records, material, and sites to evaluate all of the programs and prevent the capture by the Soviet Union. And it was established as part of the Manhattan Project's mission to coordinate foreign intelligence related to enemy nuclear activity. And that was a way they justified a lot of this shit, right? Like, oh, we can't let the Soviet, like, if we don't get these scientists, these, like, really excellent, genius men, the Soviets are going to get them, and then they're going to advance past us in atomic, biological, and chemical warfare, right?
Yeah.
So that was the way that I think that the U.S. was justifying it. The lesser of two evils, right? Now, should have been a legitimate concern about, you know, the Soviets having access to that information.
Absolutely.
It could have, and it, you know, if we're being honest about it, if you look at some of the scientists that were part of it, like Wernher von Braun and stuff like that, that could have led, let's say they would have gotten to him before we did, that could have led to the Nazi like space program reaching the moon before we did. And, you know, what would all of that look like after this, right? So it's kind of a gray area too. We're going to get into like how fucking horrible some of these men were, but they really were at the time the leading scientists in their respective fields.
Hagen was Germany's leading scientist and won all kinds of awards and positions. He was awarded the prestigious fellowship. I guess prestigious fellowship wasn't in caps, so I don't know if it's just her describing it or if that's the name. But prestigious fellowship by the Rockefeller Foundation in New York City, where Hagen invented the first yellow fever vaccine, because they were raiding this guy's Hagen's apartment, and this is who this guy was. He was the vaccine expert,
and you know, that quote. In 1937, he had been a contender for the Nobel Prize.
Yeah, that's what I was about to, because that's what you were mentioning. That makes me wonder about Bill Gates, because he's not even a scientist, but at least this guy was a scientist leading their.
Yeah, this guy, and he.
Is there any truth to Bill Gates? Because I'm probably just spouting off Bill Gates, and there's a lot of people that.
Man, I don't know. It's weird how involved he is in this vaccine business.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he legitimately is just trying to do good throughout the world and what he sees is good. But I never looked deeply into it, but I did hear some things about how he botched some vaccine deliveries in Africa and like a whole bunch of children got sick and died from it. So. And then on like Rogan's most recent podcast, Alex Jones was ranting about him and about how one of the vaccines that he was espousing, like 80% of the people who took it got sick for COVID, right? One of those COVID vaccines. I don't know how true that is. I didn't research any of it, so don't take it to the bank. That's just what I remember hearing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I do not know much about the Bill Gates conspiracy rabbit hole.
I think Microsoft is providing the computer programs and all of that stuff, or has been for a long time in some way, shape, or form for fucking dropping bombs accurately with drones. They need computers for that, but also for the tracking programs coming out apparently for tracking COVID and people who have gotten the virus, the vaccine.
You taking it? 90% effective, Dylan. You taking it?
Dude, the thing about this vaccine is people are already being denied access for not wearing a mask or for not getting tested. There's no reason to believe we're not going to start getting denied access to everything because we didn't get the vaccine. That's the whole conspiracy plan that everyone thinks is crazy, but is happening. It's like, so am I going to take it?
They could realistically force people to take. I think it's going to be like a flu vaccine type of situation where it's optional, but they strongly encourage everyone to take it.
Well, that's what they say about masks. Every place is
a flu vaccine. Yeah. See, I don't mind the mask. It's whatever. Like, it does make some type of logical sense to me that, like, oh, hey, it's going to stop at least how far droplets go. I'm not saying it's going to protect you from getting the virus or anything like that. So whatever. I'm so used to the mask thing now at this point. Like, it doesn't really bother me whether I got a mask, wear a mask to go into somewhere or not.
Well, it bothers me because the economy's still shut down and it's like, we're doing this, but it represents something totally bigger than, I don't mind the mask, but I mind wearing it when
in some places the economy shut down. Like down here, we're fucking basically wide open, bro. Like,
so why aren't y'all having shows?
Well, I guess, all right, you have a point where I guess we're not wide open. But when it comes to every other everyday part of everyday life, like, it feels like we're pretty much wild. I can go eat at a restaurant right now, you know?
Every restaurant?
Yeah. I mean,
is it half capacity?
You're supposed to wear a mask when you walk in. You're supposed to wear a mask, like, to your seat and, like, take it off once you're there. But yeah, I go, like, my friend Kelly comes over from Baton Rouge once a week and we go eat out somewhere. Like, we go eat out at, like, down the road at, like, Buffalo Wild Wings or wherever, right?
Is it half capacity?
Yeah, they probably do have some tables, like, blocked off now that I think about it.
Because Denver, it's everything's half capacity. People are still terrified and most places don't let you in the lobby and a lot of places are closed. It's like, it's still ghost townish and people are like, you, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, but, I mean, at this point, I don't think the virus is a fake thing. That's why it's like, all right, masks make some kind of sense. But I agree with you. Like, I don't think we should be completely locked down to the point where we are. Like, I think that individual businesses and private organizations should be able to make those decisions for themselves on how to protect both their employees and their patrons. And if you as a customer or you as an employee don't want to fucking, don't agree with what standards or practices that particular business has in place, you just don't fucking go there.
But what if it's important things, like every grocery store won't let you in because the cameras are scanning that you don't have the vaccine. You can't go to the bank because they're keeping you out.
I'm saying those protocols should probably be the decision for the businesses that themselves, not government mandated. So I think we're on the same page there.
Well,
do you see what I mean? Like, I don't think that the government should be the one dictating all of these things.
Well, they are basically right now.
Yeah, I mean,
and we're wearing the masks.
Not everyone's wearing a mask. Like,
all I'm saying is I don't mind wearing a mask, but everything's here is like still.
I like, get you.
Ford's restaurant is going to be like cutting out more hours this week or something. And a lot of these states are shutting down more. It's like, this mask. It's like, if it would just be wide open and everything's back to normal, we just got to wear a mask. Like, okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I want. Is like, just open back up. Let us wear a mask. You know, if businesses want to like go to half capacity to protect people, okay, cool. That's on them. They can make their own decision about that. And if customers aren't comfortable with the way a business is handling opening back up, then they don't have to go there. Right.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. Yeah. We should probably just all wear a mask and just go about our daily lives as we normally would. And until we get like a fucking, we either get herd immunity or, a vaccine that is 100% effective and proven safe.
If we have a government that's been infiltrated by the Nazis for 60 years, we can expect this to be filled with more bullshit.
Yeah, you're right, though. This is a conspiracy podcast, and there's probably, even though there's definitely going to be some people taking advantage of the turbulence of the situation to advance themselves and gain more power within society.
Yeah, there's no political balance or anything, because the government's mandating this shutdown, but they gave maybe everybody that $1,200. And that's it. Yeah. So it's like, how are they going to shut it down and then sign a multi-billion-dollar war budget while at the same time not signing for Medicare for All or for businesses and people to be bailed out while they bailed out banks? All since COVID happened, they sign off on military budgets and bank bailouts. So, like, looking at that, they are fucking us.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely
hardcore.
You're right. Looking at it that way, they're definitely fucking us hardcore.
So, like, if a vaccine comes out... I never said they weren't fucking us.
I just said I was okay with wearing a mask.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. It's like, I don't mind it either, just on and off, but they're still fucking us. It's like, we're wearing the mask, assholes. At least bail us out in the meantime. Fuck it. So, like, these masks, I don't mind it physically, but they still piss me off.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. I do agree with you, bro.
Especially this fucking skinny man bun, cut off jean, 28-year-old bike riding hipsters out there in beautiful Denver with masks on, voting for Biden.
I don't wear one outside.
You know, get a fucking grip, people. Jesus.
I don't wear a mask when I run.
Riding a bike with the crazy.
Yeah, you do not see that shit around here though, Dylan. Like, that's one thing you don't see in Louisiana. As soon as people walk out of a store or an indoor environment, masks off. I mean,
into a store?
Out. Like, when you walk, as soon as you get outside, people take their masks off, which makes sense. Like, you're in fucking open air. Why are you masked up? You're not anywhere near anybody. You're socially distant.
People are a lot more uptight about it here. They'll be ordering at a restaurant on the sidewalk with the window open, outside, masked up. And, like, in principle, I don't. I'm like, we're outside. I'm not doing it. Then nobody tells me nothing, but I think the masking over here, and that results in businesses keeping tighter because they could open their fucking lot. We talked about this in one of the last episodes, but just, Hagen, at least in Germany, this guy's apartment they were raiding, he was a scientist. We got Bill Gates and shit now, and Johnson & Johnson, which was a Nazi company. Like, we got these Nazi, Bayer, Nazi company.
Yeah.
IG Farman, Volkswagen.
These are all Nazi companies that worked hand in hand and like participated in the rent-a-slave services that you were talking about earlier.
Albert Speer, I think, was that guy.
So to kind of
back to Hagen.
So yeah, they were raiding Hagen's apartment, and what they were looking for was evidence of ABC warfare and how far the Nazis had gotten. They ended up finding out like a few days prior from capturing a couple of Nazi scientists that the Nazi atomic bomb program had been a failure. So that was a huge relief, but they knew that the Nazis were pretty far along with their biological weapons capabilities. And that's what they were looking for in Hagen's apartment. They wanted to see how far along they were, because Hagen was this renowned vaccine scientist.
He was known for discovering electron spin. That's what his achievement was.
No, that was Goldsmith. That's the guy.
Goldsmith.
That's Samuel Goldsmith, who was the guy who was part of Operation Alsos. So you're talking about the Allied.
Goldsmith. Yeah, Goldsmith.
Goldsmith was the guy in this apartment searching through Hagen's files was Samuel Goldsmith, who had become famous at 23 years old for identifying the concept of electron spin.
And he went to Strasbourg, France.
Right. And he was the chief, I think, scientist of Operation Alsos for the Allies.
An offshoot of the Manhattan Project.
Right. During the war, he had worked on weapon development for MIT. So he'd gotten some pretty good insight into ABC warfare, which is why he ended up in this position of chief scientific officer of Operation Alsos. So they're in this apartment, Strasbourg, France. He has two other guys with him who are expert, like bacterial scientists, I believe it was.
bacteriological warfare experts Bill Cromartie and Fred Wardenberg.
There you go. I don't have my notes in front of me, but yes. So they had these two bacterial scientists in this apartment, and they're searching through all the notes of Dr. Eugene Hagen. And at one point, they find just some normal correspondence between Nazi officers, and they both kind of like let out a huge gasp, because what they figure out was, and I'll read you what they came across. Right. So this was the letter of the 100 prisoners you sent me. Hagen wrote to Dr. August Hurst, 18 died in transport. Only 12 are in a condition suitable for my experiments. I therefore request that you send me another 100 prisoners between 20 and 40 years of age who are healthy and in a physical condition comparable to soldiers. Hail Hitler, Professor Dr. E. Hagen. And that just kind of validated to them, all right, here's this scientist who almost won the Nobel Prize. Got this prestigious award from the Rockefeller Institute, and he, in the name of science, he is experimenting with vaccines on healthy prisoners of war. So committing war crimes.
Oh, does that sound familiar, Jesse?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that sound like the vaccine experiments that are going on right now with Operation Warp Speed in the third world countries, where people are probably working as slaves for a big American empire? Projects like mining minerals out of their ground, oil.
I haven't looked into enough of that to know if all of that what you said was factual, but it would make sense if it was factual, considering that now Dr. Eugene Hagen never did become part of Operation Paperclip. He actually ended up working for the Russians.
Yep.
War. He fled to the Soviet neutral zone and worked for the Russians. But two of the other physicians that he worked closely with, I got their name in my notes somewhere here. I have to look it up. But two of the physicians he worked with were part of Operation Paperclip and were apparently a big part of it. I haven't gotten that far.
Yeah. It was the Third Reich's Deputy Surgeon General, Dr. Kurt Blohm, and Surgeon General Walter Schreiber. Schreiber was in charge of vaccines, and Blohm was in charge of biological weapons. As the author puts it, Annie Jacobson, the sword and the shield. And right. they were both internationally renowned physicians before Hitler rose to power. Before he was in power, they were already doing good. They were good people doing good things, doing vaccines for shit. I mean, maybe the yellow fever has some conspiracy to it, but
that's what's so wild about all of this. These people were regarded as like good, ethical human beings who were renowned for actually creating solutions for humans to take care of people. And they were doing horrific things in the name of science. They were experimenting on human beings. And so like the idea was like, so they came to this realization in the apartment that night that Dr. Eugene Hagen was this excellent vaccine scientist. And what he was doing, he was figuring out the shields for the biological weapons that the Nazis were planning to deploy, right? So in order to deploy a biological weapon, your soldiers have to be immune to whatever it is that you're trying to unleash upon the opposing army. Mm-hmm. So the only way to figure that out and find out if you're immune to it or not, is you have to test it on people, right? So I guess maybe what you're stating about what's happening in third world countries might be true, because the only way you know if a vaccine is going to work is off of a human subject, right? So
yeah, and we know that America has like 130 bases around the world where they've colonized and democratized these places. I mean, that's what Libya was, I think, when Hillary murdered Gaddafi in Libya and then open air slave trading took place. Correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I understand, that's because they were trying to get off of our petrol dollar that we forced there and go back to the gold standard because they have gold. And we didn't want that. So we killed them, and now they're still on oil, but open air slave trading is taking place. So we have bases around the world. So what we're doing in the Middle East, we just force our democracy into they propagandized to us. This is the whole Nazi machine I was talking about. These wars and the way they run propaganda, and we think we're doing good things. Just like they thought these were good people. I was at a party and a guy was, I didn't go into it, but just he quote unquote, what are you talking about? Bill Gates is like a good guy. You don't think he's a good guy? And I was like, it just sounds this very Nazi Germany-esque like that, because if these guys are doing these things and what little we know about them is that they're good people, it's because of the machine is putting them off that way. We don't know everything that's happening, but where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's enough stuff around Bill Gates and his past vaccine testing and his role. And yeah, so
his trips to Epstein Island.
Yeah, exactly.
Not all about.
Did
everyone just forget about that?
Yeah, exactly. And you know why? QAnon and Pizzagate. It hits mainstream through QAnon Pizzagate. And then everyone turns away because that's stupid horseshit, which Pizzagate is. So if you talk about the Jeffrey Epstein child pedophilia network, a good buddy of mine, like, doesn't even, he kind of brushes it off, and maybe it's very normal for people to do that. Like, people I know have Pizzagated me, and I've never said Pizzagate. I only talked about Epstein's arrest back when it happened.
Wait, people just pizza. But you have a pizza tattooed on your arm.
Oh shit!
You have to believe in Pizzagate.
Yeah, bro. I'm gonna get the I'm gonna get the little spiral over here.
Yeah, hey, the upside down triangle.
Yeah, there's a weird symbology in Lakewood. I'm screen sharing. I'm about to screen share. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Because the
let's see.
Because the next chapter is where there's the party at Castle Varlar. Not the next chapter, but the next section.
The next part of the chapter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that castle's pretty.
Yeah, you got pictures of it?
I do.
Okay,
I mean, you probably do too, but...
Yeah, just a couple. Cool. Show what you got, because I just grabbed them off of some website. Look at Colorado logo. Look at the let me screen share with you real quick the logo for Lakewood, Colorado.
That's Castle Varlar right there that we're about to talk about.
Yep.
So picture a party, a really prestigious party for four Nazi officers taking place on a night in, I don't remember when it was. It's in my notes somewhere.
Yeah, hold up real quick. Let me show you this. Let me show you the logo of Lakewood.
All right.
Start sharing. This is the logo of Lakewood. Hold on. That's Castle Varlar again. Lakewood, Colorado. This is the logo, that little thing with the mountain. Isn't that weird?
That's weird.
Yeah. DTC Boulevard sign. Because there's another weird symbol.
Well, Colorado has a bunch of weird shit going on, right? Like the airport in Denver. What's up with all that bullshit?
There's a lot of weird stuff there. Some people think that...
Like the artwork on the walls in Denver, have you seen that? Like with the people with the gas masks on and stuff? It's like some horrific looking artwork. It's like, all right, why would you put that in the airport?
It is. Okay, I can't find the sign that's on downtown Colorado Boulevard, but it's the Vitruvian Man. There's a circle. Okay. It's just on the sign where the red light is, and it's the Vitruvian Man with three lines. It's just this random... really deep symbology to just stick on the red light signs, like pictures, like next to the road name, Quebec Street. And it's the Vitruvian Man. It's Vitruvian Man's everywhere with the little, that little pedophile looking logo. Weird, man. Okay, go ahead. Back to Castle Varlar.
Castle Varlar. So a couple weeks after the Allsos mission at Strasbourg, that's when this party at Castle Varlar was taking place.
Yeah.
So basically, they had these giant, these portable rocket launching pads that were positioned all along the lawns at Castle Varlar, and they were being readied with V2 rockets.
V2. So let me screen share this because I got pictures of the rockets.
Yeah, man.
Oh, I'm still screen sharing.
Yeah, I know. I had to click on a different window so I didn't just talk to myself. It's weird.
Oh, my bad. I thought I turned it off.
It's all right.
Okay, so keep going about the rockets. This is V1.
So, yeah, the V1 rockets had been really tearing up Europe since the, June of 1944 when they started, like, nailing London with the V1 rockets. And the V2 was the latest iteration of it. It was 46 feet long. It carried a warhead filled with up to 2,000 pounds of explosives in its nose cone. It could travel at distances of up to 190 miles, up to five times the speed of sound.
That's it right there. That's the V2.
Yep. I have a picture of it on one of those mobile launch pads if you want to see that too.
Yeah, yeah. Pull up your screen.
All right, I'll show you real quick.
So this castle, Varlar Party, if you want to look it up, it's actually called Stift Varlar.
This is a V2 on the one of those portable rocket launching pads.
They were launching these rockets at Antwerp, Belgium. These were live rockets that they were launching off at this party with renowned people at this castle you just showed. It's a party to commemorate four scientists getting the highest German medal, the Knight's Cross of the War Service Cross. That's literally what it's called.
Yeah, it's like a long mouthful of a title.
And they would launch off a rocket. All the lights would go off in this place at the dinner table. It was just dark silence. And then a curtain would slide out from the wall. And then on the wintered lawn, as it was described, that V2 rocket was just sitting there. And they would launch it off at Antwerp, Belgium, because they were trying to take back the port that America and France was using. And Antwerp had been a center of war for like a long time and had been taken back and liberated 12 times. This was another time.
And a strategic stronghold.
Yeah.
Like this is a port city.
And he was bombing those. He was like, no, I want to have a party and commemorate the guys that helped build these rockets while we bomb the fuck out of these people with this new disgusting V2 rocket. It's super disgusting.
And so the very first rocket that landed in Antwerp, ended up landing on, let's see, I have it in my notes somewhere. It was a theater. I don't remember the name of the theater.
Rex.
The Rex Theater.
The Rex Theater. They were watching a film by a guy named Glenn something.
And it there were 1,200 people in that theater. The Rex Cinema. 1,200 people watching a Gary Cooper film. It was the highest death toll from a single rocket attack during the war. That one rocket took 567 lives. So, the Germans needed Antwerp shut down, and that's what the V2 was all about. And they were there that night celebrating the scientists who were part of the V2 rocket program.
They were watching a Gary Cooper film at 3:20 p.m. at the Rex Cinema on December 16th.
So the scientists they were honoring that night were Werner von Braun.
He was an aristocrat. He was a trust fund kid. He was a rich fuck. Physicist. Go ahead. Next guy.
Walter Rydell.
Top scientist in the Rocket Design Bureau.
Yep.
And the Reich's Armament Ministry representative, Heinz Kunz.
Heinz Kunz, yep.
So they would turn off the lights, roll back the curtain, launch a rocket, open the lights, roll back the curtain, commemorate Werner von Braun. It would go dark again. They'd launch another rocket in the dark. And it was described, Albert Speer described that scene of just their faces lighting up and the pride he would feel. The pride he would feel when they would launch the rocket. In the dark, those people's faces lighting up from the rocket taking off.
Well, we missed someone. We missed one person. Major General Walter Dornberger.
Dornberger.
He was the man that was in charge of the whole program for the German Army's
weapon. He had four patents for rocket development.
He was the one who had, it was his idea to use mobile rocket pads rather than launching them from fortified bases. Which turned out to be a really good idea for Germany.
Mm-hmm.
They were honoring Major General Walter Dornberger, Werner von Braun, Heinz Kunz, and Walter Rydell. And the guy, like you said, who was overseeing all of this and presenting the medals was Albert Speer, who is Hitler's Minister of Armaments and War Production. This guy was super influential. You know, he basically influenced Hitler in 42 to make every other element of the German economy second to its armaments production. Does that sound familiar to you from anything, anywhere, any country?
America.
Done something similar to that, that has made, if you look at our budgets, like what, is it not predominantly going to armaments production for us?
Yeah, he made.
To this day? I mean, maybe not armaments production, but definitely. Our war budgets.
Yeah, Speer made all the spending and stuff equal 2/3 of the GDP, the gross domestic product, something like that.
So he was super high up in the Third Reich.
And you know, he came to power after the previous guy died in a plane crash. They always die in a plane crash. You broke out. Your mic stopped.
What was his name?
Fritz Todt. T-O-D-T. Todt. Fritz Todt.
The name was familiar to me, but I didn't find much on him. But yeah, so that was a pretty kind of gross display that night that the Germans were partaking in.
Dude, how can you sit there and have a dinner and drink champagne knowing that rocket just blasted? Just, you know, somewhere in the city, just killing people.
Well, what's grosser was how the V2 rocket program came to be.
Yeah,
than that. So
Norden,
the whole program was started in this isolated island facility called Peenemünde.
Yes, hold that thought.
Okay,
Dornberger at the party. I found the quote. This is what he said: "The scene, the blackness of the night. The room suddenly lit up with the flickering light of the rocket's exhaust and was shaken by the reverberations of its engines." That's just him pontificating on how awesome it was. Right. But one time he felt so much pride, he cried. He wept with joy. It was said that he wept with joy.
That's so crazy. Yeah. Just so you know how powerful these V2 rockets were, the reverberation from each rocket spread up to 20 miles.
Yeah, this is the picture I'm sharing is the aftermath of the V1 bomb in 1944.
Yeah.
So the V1 was just like a soaring thing they'd strap to the top of the plane and then drop it. I don't know how they would aim it and steer it. I guess they would just be like, okay, this is good, and just let it go. But it would just soar down. So that's the V1. But I'm just imagining. The
V2 was savage weapon.
Yeah.
It's in 5 times the speed of sound. Like they could not shoot it down. Like the Allied aircrafts could not shoot it down.
It was too fast because of the altitude and the speed. It traveled the speed of sound. It could go like 190 miles total. Dude, this diagram right here shows the platform it shot off of as tall as a guy, and the rocket's like 45 feet tall. But just to wrap up this party at Varlar and the shit that was happening, look at that rocket, and you're sitting there in the castle, in this place, watching that big fucking rocket take off, like in the backyard. That huge freaking rocket. I can't believe it, man. It blows my mind just how disgusting.
Yeah, like we knew the Nazis did gross shit during the war, but when you hear like these specific incidents, oh my God, like that person on the ground right there.
Yeah, that's a V2 bomb that hit. And this guy's walking like he's like, oh, this shit happens. I got to get to the office and record it.
Bruh. Like our generation does not know struggle and evil. Like the people that went through this, man.
Yeah, that was Whitechapel. Whitechapel in London was attacked right here in 1945, killed 134 people.
Bro. It's hard to,
oh, that's
hard
to
imagine all this stuff, man.
That's Whitechapel. Sorry. That was a V2 bomb.
The V2 bombs were known as one of Germany's wonder weapons. They called them.
Yeah, that was the propaganda minister Goebbels, Jeffrey Goebbels, that came up with that term to present it to the public. Wonder weapons. That's how propaganda works.
And, the British were like so terrified of these weapons, they ended up evacuating 1 million British from city centers because they thought the next generation of the V weapons were going to carry like biological or chemical weapons, which it probably would have if the Nazis would have, you know, developed those programs to that point.
Yep.
And killed millions of people.
Okay, so
this whole thing, we'll get back to like how it was started. It was started at Peenemünde.
Yeah, Peenemünde.
Peenemünde, which is a isolated island facility off the Baltic coast. And that's where it was conceived and originally produced. They ended up having to move it from Peenemünde because of an attack.
Yep.
I don't remember. Do you remember exactly when the attack was?
Not exactly. I'm catching up on my notes, but...
Yeah, me too. I'm just kind of like referring to them when I need them, so I get lost.
I don't feel like we're done with the bomb thing, though. I think that's what's tripping me up, but I think we are.
Yeah, we're done with it. Well, basically, where I left off just now. So the U.S. at this point was 20 years behind Germany when it comes to rocket development. So the U.S. started this new branch called the rocket branch, which is inside the U.S. Army Ordnance. And it was headed by this guy named Colonel Gervais William Trickle. So he was in charge of putting together a group of Army scientists sent to Europe as part of Special Mission V2. And their whole goal was to capture the rockets and everything related to them to ship them back to the U.S. so they could be studied, and they can cut down the amount of like millions of dollars and a shitload of time in terms of how long it would take the U.S. to manufacture weapons of this magnitude. The British kind of had a head start on determining like where the rockets were being assembled at. They found that after that attack in Peenemünde, they had moved the operation to central Germany in the Harz Mountains, H-A-R-Z.
This is the map I have up of those Harz Mountains right there, Brocken. Brocken Mountain, the highest peak of the Harz Mountains.
Yep. So it was in the Harz Mountains that the Nazis, let me not inaccurately state that. But the Nazis had ended up bringing back the institution of slavery, as you alluded to earlier, from prisoners of the concentration camps. The place where they worked on these rockets was a place known as Metalwerk, which translates to the Metalworks, which was a euphemism. It was also called Nordhausen, and after the town and... they had Dora, which was the code name for the concentration camp. So all of these places kind of, when I was Googling all this, they all kind of refer to the same place, right?
Well, it turned
Metalwerk is like the tunnel system there. Nordhausen was the town, and Dora was the code name for the concentration camps there.
I think so, from what I gathered, Dora was what they eventually called it because it grew so big that the managers of Nordhausen each got their own concentration camp, and that was called Dora. It grew so big because originally at Peenemünde, the first place, it was small. And then when they moved to this place, within 2 months, they had 8,000 people working in the tunnels as opposed to like 150 originally or something.
Right.
So it grew and grew and grew and grew, and then it turned into Dora, which was 30 different actual camps, but managed by the guy. What I thought was fascinating was the mountain range,
right?
The Harz Mountains. That author, Johann von Goetz, wrote about it in the 1700s, 1800s. And I had to look this up, but it was a masterpiece. Faust was inspired by his walk up the trail to the Harz Mountains in December of 1777. So that author walked that trail, which apparently is a famous trail. to walk. And then he wrote that, and the character was dissatisfied with his life and made a deal with the devil for magical powers and knowledge to indulge his worldly pleasures. And in a, and then Annie Jacobson pointed out in the Disney movie Fantasia, those same mountains were where evil forces clashed to do evil deeds. But well, in
they
reality,
always kind of had a, like a weird meaning to them.
So do you think Hitler chose those mountains because he was in tune with the weird meaning and he wanted to symbolically, occultically make everything a little extra evil?
Thing was, I don't think it was Hitler who chose those mountains. I think it was Heinrich Himmler, or was who ended up suggesting that Hitler move the Peenemünde facility to the Harz Mountains.
Right. I mean, I guess it's still an obvious choice, yeah, trying to gain secrecy with your people, because that was one of the that was one of the things of the slave. It wasn't that they needed work done. They learned the three valuable parts of slavery, which was they're cheap, you have workers to choose from all the time, and secrecy, because as one of these guys pointed out, they don't even get mail. So it's perfect to do these top secret projects with slaves, because you're working on the death anyway. They're never getting out.
Yeah. Well, some of the disgusting accounts of that. So like, basically they had this guy, Brigadier General Hans Kammler, who was a civil engineer that built the gas chambers at Auschwitz. He was the one who was in charge of expanding the tunnel system at Nordhausen. And so they brought these slaves in to do this. Well, the SS feared that the slaves might revolt if they had mining tools. So they made these men dig these tunnels with their bare hands.
That's insane, man.
Which is just great. I mean, just if you think of how hard work it is to dig just in general with tools, they made these men do it with their bare fucking hands to expand this tunnel system. By September of 43, they had started getting machinery and personnel from Peenemünde. And one of the notable people that came over at this time frame was the man in charge of production, who was Arthur Rudolph. And he was important part of Operation Paperclip as well.
He worked his whole specialty, Von Braun.
Yeah, his whole specialty was rocket engine assembly. And like you said, he worked under Von Braun since like 34. So just to describe, I'm going to quote the book here because I think it's pretty poignant, just to describe the conditions that the slaves worked in, right? So the slaves worked 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week. No fresh air in the tunnels, no ventilation system, no water, and very little light. Laborers slept inside the tunnels on wood bunk beds. There were no washing facilities and no sanitation. Latrines were barrels cut in half. The workers suffered and died from starvation, dysentery, pleurisy, pneumonia, tuberculosis, and phlemasia from beatings. I don't even know what that means. The men were walking...
Inflammation.
Okay.
I looked it up. The phlegmasia is... It's not specific, but it's basically just so much inflammation in your body. I looked up what... I didn't know what dysentery was, but it's diarrhea with blood.
I know what that is, yeah.
Which reminds me, I think like 2 million people die from that a year, and there's no lockdowns. Okay, so anyway. And then pleurisy, which is inflammation of the membrane surrounding the lungs and the chest cavity. Just from breathing all that smoke. Dude, men, I think you read this, but that men would die from the weight of the parts. They're forced to carry.
Yeah. They were just basically walking skeletons, skin stretched over bones. Some died from ammonia burns to the lungs. Others died by being crushed from the weight of rocket parts they were forced to carry. The dead were replaceable to the Nazis. Only rockets and bodies came out of Nordhausen. Workers who were slow were beaten to death. Insubordinates were garroted and hanged. And then after the war, war crime investigators determined that approximately half of the 60,000 men eventually brought to Nordhausen were worked to death. So this was in the 40s, bruh. This is like a lifetime ago that people were doing this to other
in human beings. In the 40s. And you know what's weird? It was something at the very beginning. The Operation Paperclip was started out of the Pentagon. And there's rings in the Pentagon, and the outer ring is where it started, the E ring. So there's E goes all the way into A, and then there's F and G in the basement. So I thought that was weird. A, B, C, D, F, G, like the seven modes of music. It's a pentagon. It's very, you know, occultic. They kind of give it to you to read into and have fun with. But anyway, the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Paperclip started in, when was it, 1942? It was founded in 1942. The Joint Chiefs of Staff was founded in 1942 specifically to run Paperclip, because the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I looked it up, it is, they advise the President, the Secretary of Defense, the Homeland Security Council, and the National Security Council. It's the chairman and vice chairman and the service chiefs of the Army, Marine, Navy, Air Force, Space Force, Chief of National Guard Bureau. All it is the chiefs of the military that made a political faction in 1942 specifically to go achieve Paperclip, because Paperclip started in like 43. And I'm going to screen share these pictures. They were started at the same time. And then look at this. Look at this real quick. So this is the picture of the medal that Von Braun and them got awarded.
Right.
Right?
Knight's Cross.
Okay,
right.
You see that? Okay, real quick. Well, you saw that other logo?
Just put them side by side.
Real quick. It looks Nazi, right? It looks Nazi, right? It's not. It's the Joint. I'm building up to it. It's the Joint Chief of Staff logo. I got to press the extra button to put them side by side. Look at that. So this, the Joint Chiefs of Staff was made at the same time, like a year before Paperclip. I mean, how similar is that? Isn't that
That's
weird?
That's pretty eerie, with the swords coming in from the side.
Yeah. It's like, you got two options. Either they knew they were going after the Nazis, these top guys who, this was the medal that represented the best of the best, right? So they wanted the best of the best, so they got the same medal to give to those guys or whatever. I don't know.
That's pretty eerie, man. I did not put that together. That's crazy.
Or the other option is the person who designed this logo got totally lucky and didn't even mean to. Because it's the same thing, dude. And it was made at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, look, just being devil's advocate, I could get that. They're both medals honoring positions from the military, and that has always been associated with swords, which there's only, I guess, only so many ways you could display a sword on a little medal or patch like that. But that's eerily similar.
Yeah, and then the logo for the... See, I had to look up the Aerospace Medical Association, because earlier in the notes, we were talking about how we needed the technology from the Nazis for rockets, biological weapons, and space medicine is what caught my attention, which is basically stuff to help you with gravity problems, brain... I got the notes, but...
Yeah, I remember reading that in the book.
This is the logo of both of those. And again, you have like the serpent around the what is Hermes' staff with the eagle wing, which you get into the eagle and the serpent, and then the serpent again. I mean, straight up a serpent, dude, on the Aerospace Society of Met, like just the snake with the Saturn rings back there. I think there's a lot in the symbols, because everything's deliberate. You know, they don't just, the government doesn't say, yeah, that'll work, whatever. It's like everything is a message.
Well, we should look at who designed these logos.
I know, man. Okay, let's carry on.
All right, so let's see where we left. We left off about how horrible the conditions the slaves were working in. So that wasn't the first time the Nazis had used slave labor. They had been doing that since the 1930s and have been consistently ramping up the usage of slave labor since then. In fact, when Albert Speer took over as the armaments minister in February of 42, he got rid of the bureaucracy so that he could use more slave laborers to make production more efficient. So
he went around government.
He went around government. So
they're doing it right now. I don't want to cut you off again, but they're doing it right now with Operation Warp Speed. They're going around government bureaucracy to fast track this vaccine through these private companies, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, and they're not going to be liable for responsibility if things go wrong under government law because they bypass bureaucracy, just like the Nazis. You just said, read that again and start over since I cut you off. But we're doing that now with the COVID vaccine, Operation Warp Speed. This exactly what they did.
He got rid of bureaucracy so that he could force slave laborers to make production more efficient. Right. So in the first 6 months of tunnel work, 2,882 workers died. And this sick fuck praised Brigadier General Hans Kammler for what he considered to be great feats in engineering and for setting in so fast. By the spring of 44, V2 production had accelerated to the point where the SS provided the middlework managers with their own concentration camp, Dora, which in turn grew to include 30 subcamps. Then they had this general manager of personnel come in, whose name was George Rickhey. He was basically a veteran negotiator between the SS Business Administration main office and the private sector, right? And the private sector included those companies like Volkswagen, IG Farben, and so on and so forth. So the SS began this rent-a-slave service to firms and government enterprises. Some examples of the abhorrent actions the officers related to the production of V2 rockets running the middlework facility did. And this is a quote from the book. On May 6, 1944, days after becoming general manager of middlework, Rickhey called a meeting to discuss how to best acquire more prisoners for slave labor. Werner von Braun, Walter Dornberger, and Arthur Rudolph were all present. It was decided that the SS should enslave another 1,800 skilled French workers to fill the shoes of those who had already been worked to death. The record indicates that von Braun, Dornberger, and Rudolph showed no objection. On another occasion, von Braun basically procured the slaves himself for one of the projects at middlework. So despite these things, Arthur Rudolph, George Rickhey, Werner von Braun, and Major General Walter Dornberger and other rocket engineers would secretly be heading to the U.S. for work after the war ended, despite, you know, clear violations of, like, war. These were war crimes, man. And then just 3 weeks.
Just handpicking the slaves like they did. Like, no, these aren't good. Just saying I need more because the ones you sent me died in the train. And don't even worry about it. I'm going to come handpick them to make sure they're all good.
And these are skilled workers, by the way. So they were going to force them to, like, use the skills they've worked on throughout their lives to build up and just work them to the point where they died. And then move on to the next one. Like,
you know what's fucked up? You know what's fucked up? Man. It just hit me because these scientists that are doing that handpicking, these weren't good, normal guys at one point. Scientists doing good things, right? So they get to that point where they've dehumanized so much. And, I lost train of my thought. What was fucked up was they handpicked these guys. And I don't know. I just forgot what I was saying. But they handpicked these fucking guys. And they were good people. Good soldiers.
These are intelligent humans. It's just crazy what, like, people will, I guess, do for their ideology, right?
Oh, science.
It's hard to imagine that these people would participate in such disgusting actions.
Yeah. It's far removed from reality to just act like that and think you're separate. But these scientists, like I was saying, they were like good guys at one point and they did real science. And that's what's fucked up is a lot of the advanced science we got and benefited from in the private sector in America after the war came from technology that was made because of Nazi war. So all the good science we have comes from this really evil source. And people, the new religion is science. Like, no, we need these vaccines and these testing. And it's like, in the name of this science comes the good things that you do need. And it doesn't have to be evil either. It's just done evil. But the current evil, people don't see it, but we're still reaping positive benefits from science and then it gets to our phones and we have these awesome phones and stuff, but that technology came because we were making rockets that could blow up people 2,000 miles so we could have their heroin to keep the world drugs going.
And we act like we're morally conscious, you know?
Yeah.
It's like this thing, it just to put like a simple analogy to it, right? It's like this, like 98% of the population in the U.S. eats meat, right? But if you took them to like a third world country where, like, let's say you had to go to a market and like they went up and I watched this on like a TV show recently, right? Where these fucking people, these Americans were visiting this third world country and like, you know, they were eating meat and stuff like this. But they go to this market and they like where they actually have to pick out the chicken and they kill the chicken in front of you. And like, dude, they fucking freak out. Like, oh my God, you're so disgusting. Like, why are you doing that? Like, it's so disgusting. They start crying and all this crazy shit. It's like, how do you think that fucking meat that you bought from the grocery store in this nice, pretty wrapped up piece of cellophane plastic got to you? Like, you're just so far removed from the process that, you know, you think you're on this moral high ground because you're not the one killing the chicken and fucking pulling the feathers out and fucking preparing it. You're just reaping the rewards, the benefits of it. That's how we are as a country, pretty much as a whole, like everything we do as the U.S., bruh. Yeah. And that shit's going to catch up to us at some point.
Yeah.
You know? It's like we get to enjoy these awesome fucking cell phones and all these badass things in the country because we're kind of fucking raping and killing the rest of the world for it to a certain degree, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I just think about the virus right now because I always parallel Nazi Germany to America right now, just the propaganda and the stuff we're doing in other countries that is covered up so we can keep going on in this, you know, like it's happening. Like, this is what Germany felt like. Cause people always wonder, how did people not know what was going on with the Holocaust while it was happening? Like, citizens who were pro-Nazi.
Right.
Cause propaganda, like, Hitler didn't do this in the open. They didn't find out till after the war, when people were walked through the camps to show like what you are doing. And I was thinking, like, that's what WikiLeaks was for America. Cause it's a digital world now. That was the walkthrough to show us what our government is doing.
Right.
But it goes under the rug cause it's digital and people could just whatever, you know, but back in the day, it's like a super similar machine that we're in now. And the COVID, they're testing people, like you said. How the fuck do you think a vaccine that works and has been through all the tests gets to you? It's by testing, and it fucking up a lot on who,
right?
On who?
I don't know.
People don't, like you said. We just have it here. All the science and benefits.
As long as we can reap the benefits for it, right, and be comforted by the tit of a big government.
Yeah, and I just don't trust that. Okay. This is the only way it could happen because the government that's supposed to be helping us, that's bringing this vaccine, apart from the history that is already there about these private companies and the crimes they have with their products, like Johnson & Johnson knowingly having asbestos in their powder but still selling it, and now they're part of this Operation Warp Speed vaccine program, as well as Pfizer. And like, these companies they have proven histories that they should not be doing this. So... I guess I forgot what I was talking about again, but it's just very Nazi-esque. It really is.
Like, we may not be a Nazi culture, but we sure took that value system and into our government in the name of advancement, right?
Yeah, like
science in the name of advancement.
I don't think culturally we're Nazi-esque. We don't. I mean, we think America is. Like American exceptionism is a thing. We think America is exceptional, but it's not like a race thing necessarily. Like, the Nazis were, if you were a Nazi, you were blue, all that stuff. They were a little more extreme, but that at least the political machine to keep,
like, in order for whatever it the what I mean is, like, no matter what, whatever it takes to keep America number one, right?
Our military and our government are doing Nazi things. The people are American, but that military, government, war, science, propaganda, control thing is happening in the government.
You saw what I heard today, like, with Trump is considering, like, pulling troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, he's been saying that for years.
Yeah, like, apparently, though, like, because he's, apparently out of office or conceding or whatever, that he's, like, before he leaves, he's looking at pulling all the troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Mm, which, yeah. That wouldn't be a bad thing.
It would be. I saw him get ripped to shreds by Abby Martin, and I think there's more to it. Like, it's just one of those slick moves, because all the Trump people, they were all about how Trump was anti-war. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of his presidency right now, if it is the end of his presidency, what they're saying is, well, at least he didn't start any more wars. So him pulling out this small amount of troops, maybe, mm-hmm. relative to, like, what he should have been doing
the whole time.
It's right. A joke. It's a joke, really.
Yeah, because he increased defense spending and all this other shit, right?
Yeah, like, so the budget kept going up and up and up, and the wars kept... He didn't start any more wars, but they definitely kept going.
But I didn't know... The reason I brought that up, I didn't know if maybe it was, like, Trump's, like, little kind of fuck you to, like, the military-industrial complex because he didn't get what he wanted out of election or something. You know what maybe. I mean? Maybe. I didn't know if it was, like, something along maybe. Those
That's
lines.
An interesting angle.
I don't know. I'm not educated enough on politics to really.
I'm trying to be. I think it's important, you know?
Yeah, it is. I'm trying to be a little bit more, but.
I feel like it's every citizen's responsibility is to be as educated as you can, because that's the only way to really make good decisions and know what's going on in the world. Because on the other end of not knowing is the continuation of these genocidal wars that bomb indiscriminately on innocent villages in Middle Eastern countries for bad guys that our own CIA propped up and ran Nazi-like propaganda on us so that we buy into the war. So it's like on the other end of not knowing what's going on is that stuff continuing. So it's
you're
like,
right. Yeah.
It's like you got to eat, shit, shower, cook, go to work, and then study your politics for the day. It's like this, you know,
part of it. It's hard to, though, man. It's hard.
It is.
Like,
there's so much. You got to catch up.
So much. It's overwhelming.
You got to catch up.
It's overwhelming.
It's like jumping into basketball and being like, who's Kyrie Irving? Who gives a fuck about that guy? Like, you got a lot of catching up before you can even get. And then the people that aren't caught up get to vote for the players on the teams. And it's like, you can't vote if you don't know nothing about the sport. And, like, people that don't know really about the world, at least a little bit, to check out, you know, you just got to know enough to check out the propaganda machine. Like, that's well, yeah. You don't have to know everything.
I think I know enough to check out the propaganda machine. At yeah. least I'm doing that much.
But it's just weird. People that don't know can vote for the players in the game they know nothing about. It's so weird. So weird. But I think that wraps up Operation Paperclip. Was there some more you had? We were close to the end.
No, I mean, all I had left from that was just talking about how Albert Speer eventually fled to Castle Kranzberg.
Mm-hmm. Which was built by that guy who built, what was it, Albert Speer designed the bunker that these guys fled to in the end? Like, this guy designed everything.
You know, they talk about how a lot of the Reich's headquarters and command posts became key facilities for Operation Paperclip.
Yes.
They ended up staying the night at Castle Kranzberg and then heading to Hitler's own headquarters, which is called Alderhorst, the Eagle's Nest. From there, Hitler had been directing the Battle of the Bulge. When they got there, Hitler was pretty much hammered, drunk, and he ranted and raved about how the low point in the war would be overcome. He ended up making Speer change his mind that the war was lost. And 2 weeks later, you know, Hitler ended up heading to Berlin, where he would spend the rest of his life living in this underground bunker called the Führer Bunker, which was basically described as a being in a cement submarine. And then Speer headed to Poland to figure out with the factories they'd built over there. But by the time Spear got to Poland, he found out that the war was basically lost. He found burnt tank hulls and thousands of dead German soldiers lying on the ditches along the roads.
Hanging from the trees.
And then some hanging from the trees, like deserters that were hanging from the trees, who got hung by Field Marshal Schorner.
Yeah, with placards on their necks that says, I have declined to defend German women and children, and therefore I've been hanged. That's kind of like how they're running propaganda on COVID virus. Like, oh, you don't care about my grandparents,
so I'm going to hang you.
Yeah, it's like, no, that's not why I don't believe in this mask shit and this lockdown shit. It's like these soldiers were like, no, I'm not refusing to defend you. It don't take this out of context. I just don't want to fight for Hitler. Is that okay? It's like the same thing.
Nope, and they hung you.
Yeah, and then earlier we were talking about the Nordhausen, but that whole slavery, the rent-a-slave business and the concentration camp was managed out of the government under the name SS Business Administration Main Office, led by Heinrich Himmler. Yeah. And the work required partnerships, of which the most important were from the private sector, such as Volkswagen, IG Farben, Heinkel and Steyr, Daimler, Puch, and most notably Albert Speer. His Ministry of Armaments and War Production was the most important partnership. That's back to bypassing bureaucracy to use slave labor, cutting costs, and adding the efficiency of war production. That was managed under the SS, what was it called? SS Business Administration Main Office. Oh, that's who was managing the slaves, was the Business Administration Main Office. Got
crazy.
Yeah, and all the administrations they have today, that, you know, what's the administration leading up fucking, you know, cybersecurity? The National Security Agency.
NSA.
Yeah. Oh, National Security. That's great. We need that. Okay, move on. Nothing to see there. And then they changed that because this is another thing. The Secretary of War, Dr. Patterson, under Roosevelt, was the guy who approved Paperclip. And he said, these men are our enemies. So he knew, like, this is a weird thing. These are our enemies. So he approved it. He was the Undersecretary of War. At the same time, Henry Stimson was the Secretary of War. Remember him from Skull and Bones?
Mm-hmm.
I forget what role he played. He was either the guy or the right-hand guy to the guy that went back and forth between the Pentagon for Manhattan Project information. So Henry Stimson was Secretary of War, and that guy Patterson was Undersecretary, and then in the next presidency, Patterson became Secretary of War. So if you're a good boy, you get promoted, but Secretary of War is no longer a title. It's Secretary of Defense. So, like, they have these...
A euphemism.
Yeah, and then they change them when he... This is what I think. When people start catching on, they change the name of it. Just like with UFOs. They turned it into UAPs, Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, then IAP, like some... Mm-hmm. They have, like... And so you can't, if you look up UFOs, you reach a dead end in like 06 or something. Because after that, the real documents are under UAP. If you're searching, like, you know.
And ATIP was the program they were using recently, and now they discontinued that. Like, that's not even a program anymore. So,
yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that's sets the stage for Operation Paperclip and the rest of that book.
Yeah, we'll continue chipping away at this. The next episode, you know. I'll send you some stuff on that. I got an idea for that one. Do you have any ideas for episodes, Jay? Jay Mage? Well, don't say it on air.
Yeah.
I shouldn't ask you that on air. But yeah, I think that wraps up this first chapter, Operation Paperclip, and how America, these are my words, is the new Nazi Germany 2.0. We just don't know it yet.
Well, build back better? We'll see, right?
That global campaign everyone's saying around the world, build back better. But what's beautiful about saying that conspiracy accusation that we are Nazi Germany 2.0 is that this book, Operation Paperclip, and the truth in that operation is all the proof one needs to at least not even mock it. And like, we are politically, our military and everything is this Nazi machine. They liked what the Nazis were doing. They had to stop the Holocaust, but they liked what they were doing. I think we moved the Holocaust to Palestine.
Yeah. Ivy Martin talks a lot about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, I'm gonna get with you on some additional episodes. I'm gonna think through it some more. But there's a lot of meat out there that we can dig into, I'm sure.
Yeah, no rush, man.
Especially with all this stuff going on lately.
No rush.
Well, cool, man. Well, I'm going to go get some food. Everyone go check out Dylan's music on Spotify, Apple Music, and all the streaming platforms. Go check out Grafen on all the streaming platforms. Come join me on Tuesday evenings for workouts with the Kettlebell Killer. And y'all have a good week.
Absolutely. Check out Metamorphicon, Black Matter Lives. That's me and Jesse's record. Check out Death of Skepsis. That's me and Jesse's record. More of that shit coming. Alfred and the Ted Names. We have new jams up. New jam cast. We got a record. And we got a jam tape. Don't know what a jam tape is?
It's a tape with a bunch of... Okay, you go check it out. I can tell you.
And that's it. Until next time, thanks everybody for listening. Good chatting with you, Jesse. That was fun.
You too, bro. See you next week.
Later, man.
Thanks.